From the iHotel on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 29th day of November 2017. I'm Todd Gleason at Extension's annual conference. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kevin Van Trump. He's at the Van Trump Report. And a bit later in the program, Kim Kidwell, the Dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, will join us. She addressed the Extension personnel gathered here today. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, that with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. December corn at $3.40, up 3.75. The March up 4 at $3.50, 3.75. And May at $3.61, 3.75 higher. July at $3.70, up 3.75. And the December contract at $3.86, up 3.25 for the afternoon. The soy complex finished the nearby beans at $9.93, unchanged. March unchanged at $10.04, 3/4 cent. The May up a quarter at 10.15, July at 10.23 and a half higher, and the August soybeans at 10.23 and a half, down a quarter of a cent. November at 10.05 and a quarter, down a quarter of a cent as well. Bean meal futures in the nearby contract at $3.25.20, $1.70 higher. The bean oil for the afternoon at $33.92, down 8 cents for the day. Wheat futures in Chicago at $4.17, up 6.25 cents. And the December, July for the soft red at $4.59, 4.75 cents higher. Live cattle futures in the December contract at $120.47.5, 82.5 cents higher for the day. The February's there at $126.67.5, up a dollar even. And the April's at $127.15, 75 cents higher. Feeder cattle on the afternoon finished like this at $155.80 in the January, $1.30 higher. The March, $1.12.5 higher, at $153.95. And lean hogs for the afternoon finished the nearby contract at $155.80. That was up one, rather, the lean hogs finished the nearby contract at $64.97. They were 77.5 cents higher for the day. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Here's what some of the other outside markets look like at this hour. January crude oil at $57.26 a barrel, 73 cents lower for the afternoon. Ethanol futures down about 5 tenths of a cent at $1.35 2/10. And the wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB at $1.73 even, down 4 1/10 of a cent. Heating oil or diesel fuel, 2 9/10 lower at $1.92 1/10 of a cent per gallon. And the natural gas for the day at $3.18 2/10 is up 5 4/10 of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is not available to me at this hour. However, the gold futures are down $11.70 at $1,283.20 for a troy ounce. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. A 40% chance of rain, that mainly after midnight. Mostly cloudy, a low of about 40 degrees tonight. East-southeast winds at about 7 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, cloudy through mid-morning. Gradual clearing with a high of 53 degrees on a northwest wind at 7 to 10 miles an hour. On Thursday evening, mostly clear, a low of 29. West-northwest winds at 5 to 7. And Friday, we'll have sunny skies. We'll go to a temperature high of 49. Calm winds turning to the south-southwest on Friday at 5 miles an hour in the afternoon. That'll bring us partly cloudy skies for Friday night with a low of 32. Those south winds will stay with us at 5 to 6 miles an hour. Saturday, sunny skies and 52. Those southwest winds will still be with us in the afternoon. However, they'll turn around to the west and they'll bring us clear skies and 32 degrees for Saturday evening. On Sunday, to start the week, mostly sunny and a high of 52. Sunday evening, cloudy and 40. Monday, a chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy with a high of 54. And Monday evening, some rain, mostly cloudy and a low of 41. By the time we get to Tuesday, next week, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, and a high near 51. We'll take a complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason, coming to you today from the I Hotel here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois for the annual conference of Extension. We're now joined by Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report. Hey, Kevin, thanks for being with us today and filling in on short notice. I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Todd, for having me.
So last week we had the Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. You were here and on one of the panels last year to talk about the commodity markets. One of the folks in attendance said, you know, I've remembered for the last year that Kevin Van Trump gave us some words of wisdom. And he said, when the ducks are in the air, shoot. That was a line that you gave them last year. I'm wondering what you think about this market today.
Well, we sit here, Todd, really in a similar situation. I mean, we're trading in a fairly narrow range, especially in corn and wheat and down towards the bottom of the barrel, so to speak. Beans have been a little more opportunistic, I should say, and allowing some folks a chance to maybe lock in a few longer-term profits. But, yeah, I think the same ideology applies. Meaning, you know, when the ducks are in the air, you got to shoot. I think just as when the markets take off and run for whatever headline or algo-driven type event that happens, I think we got to take advantage of it and take a little bit of risk off the table, simply because of the fact that we're in an oversupplied environment. And, you know, when you're ever in the markets deem we're in an oversupplied environment with corn here at 2.5 billion bushels and, you know, and you got beans at over 400 million, I think, you know, the market feels its job is to trim some of the fat and knock some of the high-cost producers out of the marketplace. So, you know, until the market feels we're no longer in an oversupplied environment, I think the rallies are going to be, they're going to be few, but they may come around when we have some weather scares or we get some short-covering type moves, and the guys got to take advantage of that.
Hey, yesterday, speaking of knocking some of the guys out of the marketplace or trimming back some of the corn and soybean supply, USDA yesterday released its baseline. What do you think of those acreage figures?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're early guesses. And, you know, I think it's hard for the USDA right here in this position, but it looked like they were going to trim, you know, a couple million from the cotton and the wheat side of things, which I'm probably in agreement with. It doesn't seem like anybody wants to be real aggressive in wheat down at these levels. And, you know, they add a little bit to corn and add a little bit to beans, and that's probably how this thing plays out. You know, we were 94 million acres of corn just 2 years ago. So, you know, talking 91, I don't think it's unrealistic. It seems like most guys are talking their normal rotation. We'll kick them back to a little more corn this year. I suspect the reason they added to the bean side of the equation is I've heard guys talking they may have to switch over to the bean side because it's the only thing they can make just the least amount of loss on the bean side of the equation.
So I suppose you're thinking that a lot of the heavy lifting will have to be done at some point in this marketplace by not the futures market, but by the cash grain side, and so folks will be needing to watch their local basis?
Yeah, I tell you, we've had a lot of producers and a lot of my friends and guys I'm partners with. I mean, we've had the basis pick up in a lot of areas, and I think you got to be paying real close attention right now. And in fact, many places probably should be taking advantage of that because we're afraid if it takes off and moves, some of the end users are just going to widen back out the basis on us. So some places have seen 20, 30, 40 cent improvements just trying to free up some of the bushels, get them out of the producer's hands so guys can gain some ownership at the commercials. And I think you got to be careful because if we do get a pop to the upside, they're probably going to widen that basis back out on us. So, you know, yeah, we've been paying real close attention. I think that's great advice.
And so this is the place the producers will need to pay close attention. And despite the fact that the futures may not move, there may be some opportunities. So that's one thing they'll have to catch. However, there were and will be, as you suggested, some moves in the futures market. What kind of upside potential might there be, even if it is limited?
Well, I think you've got a few stories brewing right now. I sit here, I'm bullish. I mean, I'm on the bullish side. I got some bullish positions on in wheat, and I'm looking closely at the corn market. I think there's still another leg lower possibly, but we're getting down there to levels now, I think, where you could get a little bit of a move back in the positive direction. There's some stories brewing. I think you got some concerns on the bullish side coming out of China. We're seeing Chinese buyers step back in fairly aggressively. We're hearing more rumors of China stepping in, being bigger buyers of U.S. ethanol. I suspect there could be an ethanol squeeze in the Jan contract, maybe to the upside. We're seeing some plays at some of our ethanol plants where I think we're seeing more demand coming that front. You've got some Argentine ethanol concerns and geopolitical issues brewing around Argentine ethanol that could really increase their ethanol demand domestically, which could kick some corn out of the marketplace. So I think there's a few more bullish cards coming into play here than there are bearish. And, you know, a lot of those still have to be turned over and come out of deck, and they have to come to fruition. But, you know, I'm opportunistic, and I think we're going to get another shot at corn back above $4. I think it's just going to take a little bit more time, and we're going to have to wait for some of these headlines to develop.
You're not worried very much, I take it then, about NAFTA or the North American Free Trade Agreement not being finished up sometime in January or March?
You know what? All our intel and everything we continue to hear is you may get a – I think what they say, some of the guys I talk to, is if the NAFTA deal completely blows apart, you may get a 7 to 15 cent initial knee jerk to the downside in corn with an expansion out to 20 to 30 cent movement by 2 to 3 week period, and then a stabling off, and then probably bring the money right back into it and prices come back. Soybeans, there's guys talking, you got a 50 to 75 cent possible setback on the bean side of things on the first 2 to 3 weeks on a complete blow up of NAFTA. So yeah, there's definitely some downside risk. That's why I'm sitting there on the sideline kind of thinking I'd like to be a buyer if any of that were to play out, because I think that money comes right back in on a type of evaluation play where you got more value in the products and more heavy global demand. I mean, demand's good. And I think demand's going to be a big equation as we move forward and catch a little bit of a weather hiccup. I know it's the same thing everyone else is saying, but I do think there are some geopolitical things and some things in play that may, you know, limit the downside here as we move forward into 2018.
What does your intel say about the Argentine soybean crop?
Well, I think, you know, everyone's kind of trying to figure out, you know, with the freeze, they had some inclement weather, obviously, this last weekend. There were some guys saying if it hurt the corn that was planted, you know, guys were going to come back with beans because it was already late and they didn't want to take the risk on the corn. But since they, you know, they've reduced the export tariffs on corn in Argentina, you had more Argentine corn acres. So you weigh it all out. I don't see much real change. I think everyone's sitting here teetering on La Nina. I have, you know, weather guys that I pay that half of them say, you know, we're going to go into a full-blown La Nina situation. And the other half say it's going to be the next 2 to 3 weeks, it's going to turn back around the other side, and we're not going to have a La Nina. So the real concern there is southern Argentina. Will we get too dry? Heck, who knows? I mean, that's still early, in my opinion. I think the real question is what happens with second crop corn in Brazil, and we're not really going to chew on that until mid-Feb and into early March, and that's why I said I think you got to hunker down here, be patient, wait till we turn the corner in 2018, at least the early part, and maybe perhaps we get another opportunity to the upside.
Hey, before I let you go, tell me about next week's Van Trump Conference there in Kansas City.
Yeah, we're really excited. We're sold out again this year, and I suspect from what Jay tells me and some of the other guys honest, we're going to have close to 750 people. We've got some big some guys that I wanted to hear from, a lot of guys on the CEO side of the ag innovation more than anything, kind of where we're going with the value chain, what's happening, where we're seeing money come into the ag space, you know, where we're seeing consolidation, and how, you know, as farmers, we're going to be able to, or how we're going to play this thing moving forward. So I think there's going to be a lot of interesting topics thrown around. I know some guys are already kind of lined up on opposite sides of the ethanol argument. Where's ethanol going to be in 5 years, and what are we going to do if ethanol does lose market share some way, shape, or form? And I want to hear all the interesting, you know, comments from some of the guys on the inside to see how that plays out. So we're hoping you'll be there, and that'll be good.
I'm looking forward to it. Hey, thanks for being with us today.
No problem, Todd.
Kevin Van Trump is with the Van Trump Report. We are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason at the Extension Conference here at the I Hotel on campus. We're now joined by the Dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, Kim Kidwell. She's been traveling the state of Illinois for, I think, the better part of a year now, visiting the counties and the units in Extension and learning a lot about how this beast that we call Extension in not just only this state, but across the nation really works. What have you learned?
It's been phenomenal. You know, I've learned that we do amazing work every day in these communities that makes a difference to people that live there. And, you know, from some of the programs that serve underprivileged kids, that support people with learning about, you know, health and nutrition, to entrepreneurialism, to the 4-H programs that are going on, you know, all the way from Chicago to Southern Illinois in an amazing context. It is phenomenal how much these people do to support bettering lives for people in communities.
You mentioned something this morning when you were addressing all the Extension personnel that are here, and I don't recall how many might be in this room, but I'm guessing 400 or 300 or something along those lines, that there is a big difference between parts of the state. For those of us who travel the state a lot, we know that from one end of the state to the other, and the biggest thing that I made note of all the time is that things move much slower in the south and much more quickly in as far as pace goes when you get closer to Chicago. What have you noticed?
Well, you know, in each of these units and each of these areas, they have different needs and they have different issues. You know, I've been just blown away by how efficient some of the folks in the poorer counties, actually, with high unemployment rates, you know, how well Extension partners with the hospitals and the schools and community organizations to get things done, get support programs done for kids and folks in the community and even in the food production sector. Up in Chicago is a very different beat. You know, there are people everywhere and the demand is outrageously high and, you know, there are different service factors that are harder to align, you know, in a way that, wow, this is not one size fits all. You know, this is a very diverse beast, and each of these counties do something a little bit different, and they all do really great work.
One of the cultural differences you talked about was sometimes it's competitive and sometimes it's synergistic. How do you see that evolving going forward for Extension across the state, or if there are things that can be used from one part of the state to the other?
You know, I think part of it is articulating, you know, what our purpose and intention is, you know, how we partner with people. And if people feel like we're threatening as far as competing for resources, we got to demonstrate how that's not true and talk about what our value added is and what we can bring to the table that supplements or expands what they do. And I think, you know, in limiting resources, people do get competitive and there's always fear that, you know, if I work with you, what am I going to lose? And so building trust, and, you know, you build trust by doing consistently good things over time again and again and again. I think we just really need to articulate that well.
As a farm broadcaster, I'm consistently talking in the agricultural world about commercial agriculture. However, you started our discussion here talking about other things that Extension does. This is an organization really that has a very, very broad outreach.
Really diverse portfolio, you know, from supporting students with robotics to the SNAP Ed programs to some of the cooking programs that they do, some of the after-school programs, ag in the classroom, you know, all kinds of things that we do to support students through Extension and 4-H activities. Really, really vibrant and valuable. And, you know, even in the ag sector, you know, I would say that we need to do a better job of rebuilding our relationship with the commercial ag sector. A lot has happened in that arena, and you know this as well as anybody, how that's evolved over the last, you know, 10, 20 years. But we do a ton of great work in urban food production, in, you know, school farms and local grown produce and food entities in neighborhoods. And, you know, there's just a really beautiful weave between what we do in food production and how we use that as a mechanism to support people in community building. You know, the community garden projects that I've seen all over the state are stunning, and the people that are involved in those and support those are learning about responsibility and doing things that change their own destiny. Like, it's really inspiring to see that happen, and the people that are involved are so motivated, inspired by it. It gives them hope that life can be better for them.
That's one of the things that Extension has always been tasked with, trying to make life better for the people, this case, of the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the model is beautiful in that it's an empowering model, not an enabling model. You know, the goal is to give people tools to improve the quality of their lives or support them with making good fact-based decisions about, you know, where they want to go and what they want to do or how they want to do it. So I like the model in that, you know, you can actually grow and expand your toolbox to the point that you implement some of these things, you will change your life in a good way.
So it really is, and you use this word a lot, about translation of things that might happen on campus that would empower people. For instance, in the simple form, how do you put together a nutritious meal?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I say this often, we do a lot of fabulous discovery work on campus, and it's really important, and it makes a difference. It advances our science in many, many ways. But if that information isn't being used by people in communities or in our industries to make decisions that are important, we really haven't served the land-grant mission. You know, so, and it's diverse. You know, when we talk about food in this college, we talk about from production all the way through consumption to the impact it has on health and well-being. It's important to look at that whole food chain, what happens to that entire food system, because the beyond the plate impact of food is hugely important to health and well-being. And I think when we tell the story from that complete portfolio, there's an access point along that chain for everybody. And I think that's what Extension really does well, is they work that access chain very well.
Two final questions. There is a couple of sentences you use to explain Extension. What is it?
You know, Extension to me is a lot about doing great work that translates into communities to change people's lives. I mean, I think what we do is look at issues and needs that they have in communities. After-school programs are a great one to think about, developing an after-school program in a community where, you know, people are working and they need some place for their kids to go before they get off work. You know, it can be that simple in some ways, and those programs are educational in a way that they are teaching people kids how to cook healthy meals, how to have healthy snacks, how to use their time efficiently to get their homework done, you know, those kinds of support programs. And it's a great example of, like, engaged translation. You know, it's not just about read it and then you do it. It's about, okay, we're going to show you how to do it, and then you go home and practice it there too.
And finally, and I've heard about this a lot since the changes made in the way the college, the university, works with farmland. Tell me a little bit about why it is that the changes were made. We've had this discussion before. The listeners are used to it. But I'm wondering, why did we make a change, and what good will it do?
Well, for me, the way the policy was written before as a competitive process that the lease went to the highest bidder just does not go arm-in-arm with how rural farming communities operate. That is not what neighbors do to neighbors. It's just not the way that goes. And I think really it walked away from the essence of what makes those communities so special. Pitting neighbor against neighbor in a bidding war is just not the right thing to do, and that's not who we are and how we should operate. And I think when we started to tell the story from that perspective of this does not align with the values of these communities, it really resonated with people. And I think since we've changed the policy, it's really resonated with people. It's unbelievable. I've done one thing in my career that has had 100% support, and it is this. We didn't anticipate that it would be this well-received, if you want to know the truth, but I felt like it was the right thing to do, and so did the chancellor, and so we were just willing to stand into the conversation around, that's not who we are, that's not how these communities roll, and they're not going to thrive if we put it into a business model that just doesn't embrace their values. And I think that's resonated extraordinarily well with the communities, because what we're doing now does resonate with who they are and how they want to be and how they want to support each other in this industry.
Dean, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Dean Kim Kidwell from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. When we come back, we'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
It's National Chocolates Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1627, John Ray was born. A leading 17th century English naturalist and botanist, he contributed to the advancement of taxonomy and is often called the father of natural history in Britain. Ray established the species as a classification, his legacy to botany. In 1786, exaggerated reports that the U.S. Confederacy concluded a treaty with Spain that permanently closed the Mississippi to U.S. passage drove the Virginia House of Delegates to adopt a resolution that read in part, "The common right in navigating the River Mississippi ought to be considered as the bountiful gift of nature to the United States." In 1911, what was then the world record for a 5-minute rainfall was set in Portobello, Panama. An incredible 2.48 inches fell. During the rainy season of October to December in Panama, rain is expected daily, most often in the afternoon and generally in the form of heavy local thunderstorms. In 1929, Dallas Sharp died. An American professor of English, he was one of the most popular nature writers of his time, and he urged people to take an interest in conservation in his book, The Lay of the Land. And in 1942, the U.S. rationed coffee during World War II. Rationing created black market demand in the U.S. primarily in meat, sugar, and gasoline. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media at the Extension Conference here on campus today. We're now joined by Drew Lerner, as usual, for a Wednesday afternoon. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. I hope the conference is going well.
We are just getting started for the day, and it's really going to be a big event. Actually, there are a lot of folks here, so I hope that we can talk more with them again tomorrow. Let's talk about the weather forecast. Can you start here in the United States and talk about the colder weather that is due to come across the U.S. next week?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we haven't had much winter this year, and not that it's really winter yet, but relative to what we usually see in the autumn, it's been very pleasant. And I think we're going to change that rather dramatically here as we go forward through the week next week. A couple of surges of very cold air will work their way southward from the Arctic, and most of the Midwest and the Plains and even the interior eastern states will all be impacted by this event. It will likely be preceded by a little bit of rain, but the cold is coming in so fast it may be difficult to get a significant snow event to take place, and that raises some concern for some of the winter crops out there, winter wheat. At this point, it's too soon to be able to say how cold it's going to get, but I sure would like to see a little snowfall before the coldest air arrives, which will be in the second half of next week.
And then turn your attention to South America, where Argentina has been dry. Is that going to change anytime soon?
Yeah, you know, we're getting a few showers and thunderstorms right now in the southwest corner of Argentina, and as we go forward through this next 4 or 5 days, we're going to see that fester on a daily basis and eventually spread northward through some of the other dry areas like Cordoba and Santiago del Estero. So eventually we're going to see a nice little improvement in topsoil moisture. However, at some of the key corn and soybean producing areas from Cordoba into Entre Rios in northern Buenos Aires may not see a great deal of rain. Maybe a couple tenths to three quarters of an inch will occur this weekend. Otherwise, it'll be dry prior to that time and dry through most of next week. And so we're a little concerned that some of that region will become a little bit too dry as we get towards the middle of December. So something to keep an eye on. Northern Buenos Aires, by the way, has had less than half of normal rainfall so far this month. They still have good subsoil moisture, but all that's going to decrease, obviously, if they don't get better rain.
Other places in South America, however, I think are doing pretty well.
That's absolutely correct. Brazil's in excellent shape. Even the southern parts of Brazil have adequate moisture at this point. There will be some portions of that region that will turn a little dry as we go forward through the next 10 days, but certainly nowhere in Brazil will there be critically dry conditions for the next 2 weeks.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report, coming to you from the University of Illinois Extension Conference held here at the iHotel in Urbana-Champaign. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.